From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack. Happy Friday to you, Dawson.
It's Friday. People listening, it might not be Friday. They might be listening on any day of the week. So
that's
we shouldn't make that assumption.
You're right. This podcast is available at your convenience.
Yes.
Whatever you'd like to listen to it.
It is. But we're recording on a Friday, and we hope you have had a good week. We're going to start with some items that have been very hot in the news. We had a conversation about a Google memo that went viral. Now, to be fair, it was not a company memo. It was written by an engineer named James Damore. He felt that Google was obsessed with diversity to the exclusion of good hiring practices. Damore wrote that there are biological differences between men and women, which naturally lead to fewer women wanting to become engineers, for example. And he cited his belief that women are more neurotic and less prone to confrontation. Damore also wrote that Google has become an ideological echo chamber, unwelcome to conservative voices.
Well, Google fired him, and they said that his memo was not only based on flawed science about men and women, but it was discriminatory and violated the Google Code of Conduct. Damore's supporters say that modern feminists just want to blur the differences between men and women. We welcome Dr. Barbara Lee Savoy, director of the Gender Studies Program at the College at Brockport, and Justin Cordello, an employment law attorney in Rochester. We asked Cordello if he's seeing a move toward equality in the workplace.
I've been practicing employment law for 15 years, and I haven't seen any drop-off in the phone calls that I get from female clients explaining in graphic detail the terrible discrimination and harassment that they have to deal with at work. You know, just last year, New York passed the Women's Equality Act to strengthen the protections for females in the workplace. And I think a major reason was because the laws weren't enough of a punitive measure to get employers or supervisors and management to start treating female employees in a way that is equal with male employees. So, no, to answer your question, I routinely get calls from female employees, and I would say 80% of my clients are female employees.
This is from a listener named Mark, and a lengthy comment. Let me read it in its entirety, and Dr. Lee Savoy, you can respond here. He says, the pendulum toward the social constructionist argument that gender and various associated traits are essentially arbitrary has swung too far. I understand where the viewpoint comes from and recognize the value of differing cultures placing different understandings on what is masculine versus feminine, or perhaps rejecting the binary completely, but to say that evolution and biology have no influence over the personality traits, behaviors, and priorities of people on the basis of gender that is heavily correlated with the sex one is born with is ridiculous. People tend to think that if you believe evolution influenced differences between males and females, that this is a threat somehow to the idea of ensuring the systems we set up to achieve equality of opportunity. The idea that equality of opportunity can only be measured on the basis of outcome is absurd. Why is it so threatening to believe that, in general, men and women may have different career interests? Social constructs are influenced by evolutionary development. They aren't invented out of whole cloth. Is there any logic to the idea that what becomes socially acceptable mirrors what has traditionally been evolutionarily successful? While it is important that we do not deny opportunity to anyone on the basis of any identity characteristic, it is foolish to think that we will ever achieve demographic parity. Even more foolish to think that this should be the goal. End quote.
That's a lot. I just want to start back with the evolution piece, and I would argue that I'm not arguing against difference. I think no one in the feminist camp really is. I'm arguing that difference is really across individuals and people, not across sex and gender, in ways that deal with their potential and their ability and what they might be inclined to do. We each have different strengths and weaknesses, and so that's something that is individually based, not sex and gender based. In terms of the notion that we're, you know, kind of going too far, I think that sexism has been around, it's, you know, forever. I've argued that it's been here for centuries. I think we really need to start rethinking that. I don't think that it's wrong to really reach for equality. I don't think that's a misconstrued goal. I don't think it's flawed. And I think as we try and think about how can we achieve equality, looking at ways that we understand practices that exclude, that discriminate, that are not inclusive, is the right strategy.
Next, a conversation about gun rights. Republican Chris Collins has proposed a new bill called the Second Amendment Guarantee Act, or SAGA, which, if passed, would repeal parts of New York's SAFE Act. Part of our conversation explored what happened in Charlottesville, where white nationalists marched with firearms prominently displayed. And while there weren't any incidents involving those firearms, anti-gun activists say the guns were an implied threat.
That led to the question, if you're in a place where someone else has a firearm, is it on you if you feel threatened? Evan asked that question to Second Amendment expert and attorney Paul Simonelli and to Gary Putup, a member of New Yorkers Against Gun Violence. They disagreed, but respectfully. First, you'll hear Paul, followed by Gary.
I would say so. And then you remove yourself from that circumstance. You know, there are places I won't go because I don't think that they're safe places to go.
Paul, does that include Walmart?
Does that include Walmart? Well,
Because when the open carry thing was all the rage, and guys were carrying assault rifles into Starbucks and Walmart. All right. So your answer is it no? Then if somebody brings an assault rifle to Walmart, which would be allowed in New York under this law that Collins proposed. So if I go to Walmart and somebody's walking around with an assault rifle, it's on me to leave. If I go for my morning coffee at Starbucks and somebody walks in with an AK-47, it's up to me to leave.
Well, that's private
property. If that's the society you want to live in.
Well, first of all, that's private property. And if those folks don't want you there, if Walmart doesn't want you there, or Starbucks doesn't want you there.
Then let's go back to Mendon's Pond. Let's go back to Mendon Ponds. Let's go back to downtown Rochester. Is it okay with you if you go to Mendon Ponds with your grandchildren and set up a blanket net to go swimming? It's all right with you when the Nazis show up with AK-47s and AR-15s.
Well, first of all, I want to step back one second here and say, in your last statement, you said Nazis, scope, and another org, and the NRA. And frankly, I take offense to that you know, you use them as if they're interchangeable. But what I will say to you once again is, everybody in this country has a right to assemble. Everybody in this country has a right to enjoy the fruits of this country. And if they are not doing anything, I see people all the time. I teach about white supremacist terrorism. That's one of the courses I teach about terrorism at MCC. I'm very familiar with it. In the military, I saw where there were some folks in there that went to an extreme. If you have a tattoo on your arm that clearly identifies you as a Nazi, and you're in Starbucks, and I don't want to be around you, I can walk out of Starbucks, or I can leave Mendon Ponds. That
right,
doesn't
tattoos don't kill. Paul, answer the question. If you go there with your grandchildren,
guns, Gary. I'm
all right,
not
if you go
guns.
There, you have no problem with that.
I am not afraid of guns.
All right. I personally, we made a different decision. And fortunately, living in a country like this, you know, the people get to make the decision, and I'm just going to argue that the majority of people don't want that, and that these are reasonable laws, and that what Congressman Collins here is doing is unreasonable.
Next, are Americans and people from different cultures becoming more tolerant of interracial marriages? That question was part of our conversation about the themes of the film The Big Sick. It's the true story of a Pakistani-American man and his white, non-Muslim girlfriend, and the challenges they face in a cross-cultural relationship.
According to Iraq War veteran and peace activist Paul Chappelle, who was a guest on the show earlier this month, 50 years ago, only about 4% of Americans believed in interracial marriages. And Paul, I think, is citing Gallup for that. Now that number is 87%. Our guests discussed their thoughts on interfaith and interracial relationships. You'll hear from Ilhan Ali, a Muslim intersectional feminist, and Sarir Fazli, the president of the Islamic Center of Rochester. But first, here's Iman Abid, a 25-year-old Muslim American.
I think there'll still be pushback. I mean, just being frank, I think there will be. And again, it's just a matter of upholding your identity and upholding your ideals. And depending on how strictly are you abiding by the principles of whatever faith you've chosen. Again, and I can only speak to Islam in the way that I have interpreted it and the way my family has interpreted it. And it's always been the belief that you marry another Muslim because this is the way you build this family. That, again, you're talking about, here you are early on in this relationship and you're questioning marriage at the very start of it, but what about when you start questioning a family and upbringing that family and what sort of religion you might bring into that household? And so, again, and I think it's the concept of like having someone of a much different faith or of no faith at all. What does that look like to in a household? Because again, subconsciously, we're always thinking about the family. We're always thinking about our parents and all these different things. And so, I mean, I think we're moving in a different direction. I don't know what that direction actually is. I don't know if it means that more people will be marrying outside of their faith and whatnot. I'm not sure, but I do think there's still going to be pushback. And again, it's just a matter of the way people have interpreted the faith ages so far. And I think, if anything, it's just moving very slowly in another direction.
Okay. Sarir?
I hate to disagree, but I can't imagine there being an 87% consensus in this country in support of interracial marriage. From what I see on the streets and in the news, I think that
you don't even believe that number is that high.
I think that number is highly, I think it's inflated. Wow. If I were to go out today, based on what I see outside, I can't imagine that 87% of the people in this country would support interracial marriage. I don't see that in the number of things that we see on the news, and I don't see it oftentimes in some of our even relationships. I mean, talk is cheap. If somebody gives me a survey to fill out, well, it's just a blind survey. Am I on the internet or it's a piece of paper? But if it comes to the point when they say where the rubber meets the road and somebody has to step up and approve or disapprove of their son or their daughter, I think the conversations that are being had in private or amongst, as Iman describes, a cultural or a religious subset of people is a starkly different conversation. And, you know, the balance, the things that we weigh in the balance every day, whether it's the family or the faith, you know, those things mean different things to different people. I think I've said here before, whatever part of the world you come from, if 10 people are from 10 different countries and they share the same faith, that doesn't necessarily mean that they've been raised with the same faith-based education. And as a result, what I believe, you may not, and vice versa. When you complicate that with marrying the white guy or the white girl, for want of a better term, it really becomes a ballgame. And in this country, we've seen tremendous progress, acceptance. You see it on the streets every single day with the number of people raising their voices against the issues of racism or hate or intolerance. It's getting better for, I'm going to say, us as a community. But I think that those people who are hitting the streets and speaking out, their voices have a long way to go to be heard, and even to put that practice into real practice amongst others, I think we have a ways to go.
Hmm. Ilhan, what do you think?
I do think there will always be pushback for interracial relationships, but our generation, I know me and Iman keep going back to that, I have hope will be the one that has a lot of interracial marriages and children and relationships and changes the future, because I work with kids and they're black, white, brown. They come from all faiths and ethnicities, and just seeing them communicate with each other and tell me about their crushes with each other and them talking about individual traits instead of being like, oh, I like that black girl or I like that white guy. I think that more of us are focusing on individuals and things we have in common. And even if I did marry somebody that what my family had approved of, even then, like you said earlier, there's colorism and different clans and classes. So even within your own religion and culture, there's issues. So if you love somebody, you're going to face those issues regardless of who you pick. It's just who you're willing to go to war for. And at the end of the day, if I love somebody, I don't care what color or religion they are.
You can still see The Big Sick at the Little Theater through August 24th.
We'll close the podcast this week with some music. NPR recently released their list of the top 150 albums of all time made by women. The number one spot went to Joni Mitchell for her 1971 album, Blue. To celebrate, the Smith Opera House in Geneva invited local singer-songwriter... Evan's laughing because her name is Connie Deming, but she's so good, and she covers Joni Mitchell so well.
You're not
going to
edit this, are you?
I'm not going to edit it.
Okay, I wrote in the script Joni Mitchell, but it's actually Connie Deming.
Yes. So the Smith Opera House invited Connie Deming to perform the entire Blue album. We asked Connie to come into the studio to discuss what makes these songs so compelling.
This song was like a diary of her travels. She was sinking, as she put it. I was going down. At the exact time I was ascending, she said, in the public eye. After just having given up her child from being destitute like a year or two before, suddenly fortune changed and she was a rising star. And at the very same time she was experiencing this, she didn't know what to call it. Is it a depression? Is it a brainwave going off somewhere else? She said she was bursting into tears at the sight of almost anything. And she knew she had to go off by herself and figure out, you know, how to restore her balance and her heart, and at the same time being scared, you know, being pressured into getting married and being scared to do that for many personal reasons that were hitting her like a ton of bricks. And then, where do I go? What do I do? And one of the things I love so much about her, she's such a self-healer. She discovered everything herself, self-taught. And so this song says, I am on a lonely road and I am traveling four times, looking for something. What can it be? I hate you some, but I love you some. And oh, gee, I love you when I forget about me. So her songs always start off about these details that are personal. And then she gets into the huge philosopher heart that she's just born with, and it becomes huge. So I just love delving into this stuff. So that the intro that I was trying to strum on this guitar, trying to pretend to be a dulcimer, which I don't play.
but again, the name of the song is?
It's called All I Want. By the way, she went to Mata La Crete and lived in the caves, the hippie caves back then, where a lot of chic people were going there to find themselves. And she had all kinds of austere goals for herself to try to live very, very simply. How am I going to do with this? So anyway, I am on a lonely road and I am traveling, looking for something. What can it be? Oh, I hate you some, but I love you some, and I love you when I forget about me. I want to be strong, I want to laugh along, I want to belong to the living, alive. I want to get up and jive, I want to wreck my stockings in a jukebox dive. Do you want to dance with me, baby? Do you want to take a chance on maybe finding some sweet romance with me, baby? Well, come on. All I really, really want our love to do is to bring out the best in me and in you too. All I really, really want our love to do is to bring out the best in me and in you. I want to talk to you, I want to shampoo you, I want to renew you again and again. Applause, life is our cause. When I think of your kisses, my mind seesaws. Do you see how you hurt me, baby? Well, I can hurt you too, but then we both get so blue. Hence the name of the record. Blue is in almost every song. That's two verses out of three.
Awesome. You are a treasure.
Thank you. Just
fabulous. Connie Deming playing Joni Mitchell here in studio for us today. And next Friday night, that is 9 days from today, on the 25th, 8 p.m., the doors open at 7 at the Smith Opera House.
That's another edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM.
And we are always on the WXXI mobile app, where it is always thrilling to hear from Rochester expats across the country who listen to Connections and WXXI every day. She's Megan, I'm Evan. Hope you have a great weekend, and we're right back with you Monday afternoon.